Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started right.
Energy, and enunciate. Are we on yet? Oh, we are. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and so glad you're with us today. It is Wednesday, August 16th, so we are looking at today in history. It was on this day that in 1954, the first issue of Sports Illustrated was published, and there were a couple of pretty significant death anniversaries on this day. It was today's the day that Elvis Presley died. We might see if we can't dig up a little gospel song of Elvis before the show is over. And it was also on the day that Babe Ruth died. So a baseball legend. I was watching a little baseball last night. Always enjoy that. So most of our lives are spent in the middle of our own story. And we really have no idea what the ups and downs and what twists and turns lie ahead. But we can guarantee a happy ending, though. And all happy endings start the same way, and that is obedience to Jesus Christ. You know, in Matthew chapter 6, verse 27, it says, can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? So I also want to suggest that you write into the station, because we're giving away Max Lucado's book, Be Anxious for Nothing. We're giving away 3 copies a day. So you can be one of those people possibly winning one of those books before it hits the streets. You can pick it up, get a copy of it. And in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31, it says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. And that is something we're going to talk about this morning, because there's plenty of it in the news. And also in Proverbs 8:13, it says, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. That's a couple of the things we're going to be talking about this morning. So glad you're with us today. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute.
I hear the roar thunder. Thy power throughout the universe displayed.
Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. I was talking to Rebecca and Paul here at the Early Morning Late Show, and I said, you get me Ed Stetzer. And Paul said, well, actually, it'd be easier to get Mike Pence than it would be Ed Stetzer. And I said, you get me, Ed. I don't know who this Mike is you speak of. You get me, Ed Stetzer. And he did. So we've got Ed Stetzer with us. He holds the Billy Graham Distinguished Chair of Church Mission and Evangelism at Wheaton College. He's executive director of the Billy Graham Center and publishes church leadership resources through Mission Group, a regular guest on Faith Radio. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning to you, Bill, and thanks for having me on the show. I've begged to be on the show time and time again, so I'm glad I could finally make it.
I know. It's been we've missed you. We've missed having you on, let me tell you.
Thank you, brother.
All right, let's talk about Charlottesville. I think you've got a couple of perspectives on this.
Yeah, kind of a weird thing. It's kind of hard to know at what point to talk about it. Do you talk about it after Saturday? Do you talk about it after yesterday? I mean, so
exactly.
Many things. So yeah. Which version of the conversation? I don't even know where to start.
I don't either. Probably we can start with Saturday and then move to Monday, because there is a train of thought that it's interesting to follow.
Yeah. Of course, you know, Saturday was such a tragedy to see the – I mean, I landed in from a flight back from Brazil Saturday morning. I turned on my television and didn't recognize the country I was in. Mm. It was heartbreaking, and to see violence like this, to see somebody killed, such a heartbreak. We our condolences go out to the family, both of the victim of the terrorist attack and the police officers who died in their service protecting and serving as they do. And so yet President Trump's response caught a lot of people's attention because his response was very odd on Saturday, mm-hmm. and has really received universal criticism and from people who are conservatives and liberals and around the world, and largely because, you know, his comments about many sides, me being, you know, kind of creating this idea that there's some equivalency between different sides here. And of course, then he gave a much clearer and very helpful statement yesterday, 48 hours late, but yesterday, and mm-hmm. condemned, as we all should. I hope many of our listeners heard people in their churches condemn the alt-right and white nationalism and white supremacy. I mean, these people are the Klan in without the robes, and it's dressed-up racism and has no place in the Church of Jesus Christ. You know, the Bible says that heaven has men and women from every tongue, tribe, and nation. And if you're a racist, you're going to hate heaven, but it's not going to be a problem for you anyway. But nevertheless, I mean, this is, you know, I actually said on Twitter, if you're a racist, you can come to our church. You just have to repent and follow a dark-complexioned Jewish savior from the Middle East. And of course, that's anathema to white nationalists, and yet that's who Jesus is. And so President Trump certainly turned that around, read a statement clearly off a teleprompter and said, you know, I condemn these, and I was so thankful that he did, though substantially late, and really missed such an easy opportunity to condemn some people who said they were doing President Trump's bidding, and he could just have said, no, they're not there, and he did yesterday, and then came Monday, and then came Tuesday's press conference, where it just was, I don't know what to think. It's very different than what he said on Monday, so it's a strange course of a couple of days, Bill. Mm-hmm. I really, again, you know, he said, well, he condemned the violence on both sides, and I get it. I mean, there was violence from people on both sides, but only one side said that they were there because they thought they were doing the president's bidding, and so his clear denunciation of them was so important and was there on his statement on Monday. I just don't know how to take his statements on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Ed, what do you think as a church should be what is the church's call in all of this?
Well, I think ultimately the church's call is to be a kind of an alternative way of life in the midst of a world where racial division and strife is evident. So, you know, I'm the interim pastor of Moody Church, and you know, we have 70 nations represented. So our executive pastor spoke to this, and I spoke to this in the sermon, is that, you know, they hate us, racists hate us, because ultimately we are the antithesis of what they believe, but we are what Ephesians 2 talks about. We are what Revelation points to, a picture of an eternity with men and women from every tongue, tribe, and nation. So I think that's what the church needs to do and to be, is to be that place of racial reconciliation, where white people and people of color and all different kinds of backgrounds and cultures and socioeconomics are all welcome, because the old expression of the ground at the foot of the cross is level, and so it is for us. We can come, all can come, and trust and follow Jesus. So I think the church has to be that alternative community, that gospel witness, that maybe you're not in a multicultural community, so your church isn't, and I get that, but we can seek to be as diverse as possible and yet also build bridges with people different than us.
Mm-hmm. Ed, how do we talk about sin and how unregenerate people do things like this? Because that's who they are at this point.
Yeah, no question. So I think ultimately we have to recognize that in the condition of the human heart, we all have a tendency towards selfism. And, you know, here what we're seeing is white people having a tendency towards selfism, but everybody does. And so what we have to recognize is for all of us, we're called by God to ultimately push aside our always focused own desires and to instead say, you know, Jesus has called us to not be about us. It calls me about him, to make much of him, to make much of Jesus. So I think that's got to be the focus, is we have to redirect the human heart for ourselves, but also, too, I think we call people who are not followers of Jesus. You know, people who are in the alt-right, you know, we call them out. It's an evil ideology, but mm-hmm. they still need Jesus.
Yeah.
And so we say to them, you know, the Jesus who died for us is the Jesus who died for you. Come. And you can't find your security in a group that you know calls for white nationalism, but you can find your security in a Jesus who is creating First Peter talks about a new people, a new race, a royal priesthood who's called for the praise of him, who's called out of darkness into his marvelous light. So even people who are listening right now, man, regardless of your background, regardless of your journey, regardless of who you don't like, Jesus still calls to you and says, come unto me, all who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. And I imagine that a lot of these people who have marched, they were just afraid. Maybe they're afraid of the socioeconomics. Maybe they're in by hate. But all of these things ultimately boil down to is Jesus shows a better way.
Yeah. Ed, boy, I just love your heart on this subject. Really, really nice. We're going to take a little break when we come back. I want to ask you about Christians. Should we be critiquing President Trump? Do we have loyalty? What should our position be on that? We're going to talk more with Ed Stetzer after the break. It's 15 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. Talking to Ed Stetzer this morning. He holds the Billy Graham Distinguished Chair of Church Missions and Evangelism at Wheaton College, also Executive Director of the Billy Graham Center. Ed, you recently wrote an article for Christianity Today about the different ways in which we can process criticizing the president. And I can remind you what they are if you haven't had enough coffee yet this morning. You said, first, some Christians respond with an argument of redirection.
I think what it's interesting, because universally, maybe you can't say universally, but almost universally, people would say President Trump made a mistake on Saturday, missed a clear opportunity to say that white supremacy is bad. This is not a hard sentence for anybody to utter, and would have really brought the country together. But he really missed the opportunity. Now, mm-hmm. Now, what's fascinating is that when I wrote that, and is that there were just a bunch of people said, no, he did not. No, he's not made a mistake. And yet it's so evident and obvious. Now, here's the deal. I think everybody makes mistakes. I make mistakes. You make mistakes. But I noticed the pattern and inability of some Christians to critique the president. And every time you would say, you know, really, the president should have called out white supremacy. And I think here's the deal. Maybe people listening right now and says, well, he, you know, I don't agree. Well, he actually agreed. He, 2 days later, did what he should have done 48 hours earlier. So the president is signaling to you, you know what, I made a mistake on Saturday. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he then later on Tuesday said he didn't, but, I mean, he read a prompt teleprompter statement.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So, but some Christians are like, what about this? It's not what about. It's no, white supremacy is bad. Nazis are bad. This should not be a hard sentence for somebody to say. But some Christians responded with redirection. Well, no. This is what about so and so? What about Nazis are bad. We can just say that. And then some responded with an argument of loyalty, where you're being disloyal to the president. Some respond to, well, have you criticized other presidents before? And just for the record, I have frequently. I think part of my job as a public commentator. Now, I know you. It's a little different when you're doing daily radio, but you know, I've criticized President Obama's view on his view of shifting sexual ethics, his view of abortion. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I was public and criticized Hillary Clinton in CNN, in Slate, a liberal magazine, and in Christianity Today.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's also okay to say, you know, President Trump kind of missed it here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet what happens is some Christians, you know, the third thing I talk about is some respond with an argument of deduction. Deductive arguments basically say that something's right if someone's done it. And it wasn't. President Trump made a mistake, fixed the mistake 2 days later. I don't really know what happened after that, and kind of redid it after that. But here's the deal. If you, as a Christian, can't see that a president makes mistakes and is occasionally you need to say, man, that was kind of a mistake, then what happens is that ultimately, and this is key, is ultimately you've lost your prophetic witness. You've lost the ability to actually serve others. For example, people in your church who are African American and others who are like, well, where is this president stand on these issues? Well, you've lost your ability to say, you know, I wish the president was more clear, and I'll be more clear. And man, I got to tell you, I think we don't need to be beholden to anybody. You know, my presidential hero is Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan made mistakes too,
mm-hmm.
and it's just something some Christians just don't seem to be able to say this. And you need to be able to say, you know, I don't. There's no perfect politician. There's no perfect party. And Donald Trump said and done some things that are really worthy of our critique, not just here but other times. And if you can't say that, then you're and there's no daylight between you and a politician, there's no distance between you and a politician, then it kind of shows where your ultimate loyalty is, and it's not to Christ.
Yeah. Ed, should we also try to say in the same breath that as we should be open to calling a mistake, we should also be encouraging each other to pray for the president as well?
Absolutely. And that's so key. And I think that's something, and I hope people pray for President Obama, too. I mean, because the Bible is quite clear that this is a biblical command that we pray for presidents. And so we will, and we should continue to, and we must continue to, because we're called to do that. And let me just say, I mean, in President Trump's case, so this has not been yesterday, as I see, was not a helpful day for, as he kind of backtracked what he said on Monday. But let me also say, too, I'm very thankful for Supreme Court Justice. We have some great members of the cabinet who reflect evangelical values. President Trump has ended the war against Christian institutions that President Obama had led, and I think Hillary Clinton would have continued. So we can definitely, there's much to say that was good, but if we can never say, man, here's what's bad, then what we've done is we've largely become more of a shill than we have lost our prophetic witness and our prophetic edge.
Mm-hmm. Ed, it's good to be patriotic, but what about when patriotism starts to get too involved in church life?
Well, first, let me just say, I think patriotism is great. You know, we had a July 4th parade. Our family participated. My daughter actually marched in the July 4th parade. We read the Declaration of Independence on Independence Day, July 4th. But I also think we need to be careful that sometimes when you go into a church service, it kind of feels, and some, not most, but sometimes I walk into a patriotic church service and I'm a little confused by who we're praising. I think I'm not so sure that I'm proud to be an American needs to be next to I love you, Lord, and I lift my voice. I think ultimately those are different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God for both, but they're two realms of reality, and I think we need to be careful that we don't mix them.
Mm-hmm. I also am curious to ask you what you think about statues coming down and what statues are next. Washington, Jefferson, where do we stop?
Right, exactly. I haven't followed it as much, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Basically, for context, for people who know, for background, is they're taking down some Confederate soldier statues. Now, I think the Confederacy was driven by, and I don't think we should pretend, was driven by, at least in part, And some people, and most, for example, Mississippi's order of secession was clearly driven by slavery. And that's what they said. I can't change what they said. And so I think ultimately when symbols of Confederacy, and to compare Robert E. Lee, who was fighting to secede from the country and fighting in a battle that many people consider primarily driven by the defense of slavers with George Washington, who owned slaves, isn't, I think, a helpful comparison. I think all of our founding fathers had blind spots, but I think also those who were involved in the rebellion against our nation, largely driven, not solely driven, but largely driven by the issue of slavery, I think that's a different thing. And I do think for a lot of people, seeing those that era celebrated has some consequences. And I think as a whole, I think, for example, I think it was good that the Confederate flag or the South Carolina flag and others have come down and been changed. I think states have recognized that, and I think people are now figuring out what does that look like for statues, things of that sort. So in general, I tend to think it's not helpful to celebrate a civil war, a rebellion against the country that was driven by slavery. And so in general, I think taking down some of those Confederate things is a good thing.
Yeah, Ed, we just have about less than a minute. Proverbs 8:13 says, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. We need to keep that in mind today, don't we?
Indeed we do. And let me just say, join with God here and hate the ideology that hates people based on their race. Call to repentance, speak out, encourage the president to be clear, and pray for the president so that he might be clear. Pray for the president he might make wise choices, and ultimately pray for our nation that it might come together, because we need a nation united, but we also need a church even more so to be united, men and women from every tongue, tribe, and nation, together here and together for eternity.
Yeah. Ed, God has given you many gifts. I like your brain power.
Thank you, brother. It's great to talk to you, and congratulations. Of course, I know it's not new, but this is the first time we've talked together. Congratulations on the show.
Oh, thanks so much. Look forward to having you on again soon. Thanks. That was Ed Stetzer. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the show in just a minute.
Early to bed and early to rise. Well, you're going to need the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio to find out what you missed.
Good morning. It's half past the hour. Kent Kaiser just walked in, so I'm a little distracted, but we're going to go to news. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Kent Kaiser in just a minute. Back at with Kent at 20 minutes to the hour. Twenty-five minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. John Townsend is a leadership coach. He's a psychologist and an author. I think he writes books with Henry Cloud. But he wants to talk about the definition of a best friend. We have all different types of friendships. And he explains and distinguishes someone as a bestie.
A friend is somebody that you like and that has shared values and they're present with you. That's important. A best friend is a friend that has the key to the vault. Meaning, your friends don't know everything about you. They don't know your past and your struggles and your weaknesses and your dreams and your gifts and where you want to go in life and your relationship with God and all that. Your best friend, you basically say to them, you get to know it all. The good, the bad, the ugly, you get to know it all. Meaning, I have to trust you very, very deeply in order for us to have that kind of friendship. And trust is a very, very scary thing because they could condemn us or criticize us or be pushed away from us. And if you look in the Bible in the Old Testament, the word for trust actually means to be careless. So when we're careless with our best friend, we don't edit, we don't walk on eggshells, and we're not politically correct. We're just kind of who we are, and we vent when we need to vent, because we know they're going to care about us anyway. They're going to certainly tell us the truth and tell us God's word and confront us, but we're going to be careless with them. So a best friend is somebody that knows it all and you can be careless with.
Wow, is that interesting. That was Dr. John Townsend. You can see, hear that whole interview. If you go to myfaithradio.com, type in his name or how to build friendships. We'll take a very short break, and then when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. So get prepared. You know what's coming up. Bagpipe music.
What were the principles of our founding fathers, and why should we care? Good question. This is Jim Garlow. Were all of the 204 men who signed the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence Christians? No, but there was an overarching faith perspective that shaped the values, ideals, and principles of the men who wrote our founding documents and led our first Congress. John Adams, the author of the Declaration, wrote, "The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. America was founded as a nation rooted in higher law, not in man's law." When you encounter those who would deny any religious roots in this country, you can be confident it was well understood by our founding fathers that the inalienable rights they wrote of and spoke to were part of a higher law established by God, not by man. Be well versed in these issues at jimgarlow.com.
Hopefully you didn't just knock your coffee over. 37 minutes after the hour, I have Dr. Kent Kaiser in studio, and of course that is his walk-up music. Bagpipes, he's a player himself. Odd things known by few. So, Kent, good morning.
Top of the morning to you.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, well, I think we're still on this Charlottesville roll, so I think we should continue the conversation, because I'd certainly like your take on it.
Well, it's been a really interesting thing from a communication perspective to watch what President Trump has been doing over the last few days. I mean, I think there's pretty much broad agreement that his first statement on Charlottesville was not very good, suggesting that there was blame on both sides. And the thing is, like, a lot of us can sit there and watch him and kind of understand where he's coming from, and he's not the smoothest talker, and he leaves gaps, and most of us can fill in the gaps, and we kind of understand what he meant and things like this. But in a situation like that, he really should have stuck to a well-prepared statement. And every once in a while, I mean, I know he wants to be the anti-politician, but every once in a while, you just have to step into that role of politician and do what's expected. And he didn't do that 2 days ago. And then, 3 days ago, and then yesterday, 2 days ago, he kind of came back out and gave another statement to, of course, disavow the legitimacy of the white supremacist hate groups. But then yesterday in this very strange press conference at the end of the day when he was supposed to be talking about infrastructure, a reporter, of course, asked about Charlottesville. And then he went back to his original message about how there's blame on both sides until he really got back into the muck on the whole issue and really kind of gave, I think, gave these supremacist groups a pass. And in fact, the former KKK leader David Duke actually tweeted out thanks to President Trump for saying that there was blame on both sides. And again, I kind of get where President Trump is coming from. There are violent people on both sides, but it's hard to make a moral equivalency between white supremacists and then the people who are fighting against white supremacy. I mean, yes, there's violence on both sides, but one of them is morally correct and the other one's morally incorrect. And he doesn't. There was no distinction being made there in Trump's statement. And then not only that, he got very defensive in this event that took place yesterday. It was a press conference that was set up specifically at Trump Tower for him to talk about infrastructure because they are going to roll out a big infrastructure plan to improve the infrastructure across the country, which is one of his campaign promises to put. I think he was talking about $1 billion or something into infrastructure, more than that. And that's what this press conference is supposed to be about. But whenever you get the president behind a microphone and you have a bunch of reporters there, the questions can go anywhere. And they did. And oddly enough, the questions didn't go in any other direction except for Charlottesville. Nobody talked about North Korea. Mm-hmm. Nobody talked about any of the other kind of issues that are going on right now. And so, unfortunately, I really think it was a big misstep on his part. Again, I think at certain points, you know, I know he wants to be the anti-politician, but at certain points, you just have to sort of take that role and be the politician. Even if he didn't want to disavow the legitimacy of these hate groups, he should have.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you this, Kent, as Christians and as first responders to any situation, I see opportunities for evangelism and discipleship and also opportunities for to talk about the condition of the human heart with people because I see evil and horrible things in the hearts of all of these haters, so to speak.
Well, right. Well, no, it's interesting to see. You know, I was listening as I was driving in this morning, and the one poll was talking about people who believe they are sinners or not, and 10% of people believe there is no such thing as sin. That's mm-hmm. That's phenomenal. You know, but yeah, I think you're right. There are these opportunities to reach out to people. This situation too. It's been very unfortunate, I think, in my mind, because you know, just in a bigger picture kind of a way, every week it seems like I see another pastor talking about Trump supporters and Christians supporting Trump, and they often write these columns where they're trying to assign motive to mm-hmm. Christians who voted for Trump, and they'll often assign motives like fear and hate and phobia, and I haven't seen that myself. The Christians I know who voted for Trump for reasons like faith and freedom and love of country or patriotism, whatever you want to call it. But then I was thinking about it, you know, the way the liberals talk, are, you know, these often it's liberal pastors, of course, who are writing this way, but they oftentimes, I think that what they're really saying is the same thing. It's just that they frame, liberals frame faith as something negative, so fear or whatever, mm-hmm. Freedom, they don't, you know, liberals aren't in favor of freedom. They want more government and so on. And so they frame that as a negative thing, like hate and patriotism. They don't see America as being the best country in the world. Liberals don't. And so, again, phobia, afraid of, like people are afraid of other countries or other people from other countries. And so as I was thinking about it, it's like they're really talking about the same things, but liberals really frame it differently. Unfortunately, then you have a situation come up like Charlottesville, which does show hate with these fringe groups, and all of a sudden you have the opportunity then for liberals to conflate these radicals who don't represent the mainstream Republican Party with the mainstream Republican Party. And, I mean, that's all part of the problem, too. I mean, I know there are a ton of liberals out there now who are going to be like, oh, yep, that's a typical Republican. Look at them. They march in the streets. They're all racist. They're all Nazis and so on. And they just don't understand it's not even true. But it just, again, gives ammunition to those who do believe that Trump supporters are just all about fear, hate, phobia, whatever it might be. And it's just so unfortunate that this has taken place.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to take a break right now, but I do want to continue this conversation. I have Dr. Kent Kaiser in studio. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to make, and you have a question you'd like to direct at Kent, please give us a call, 1-877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We'd love to take your call. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. We're talking to Dr. Kent Kaiser. You know, Kent, I was thinking of a Muslim were to use a car to run people down and then commit jihad in the process. The media would say, hey, don't blame all Muslims.
It's true.
Wouldn't they?
But now when there's a radical white supremacist who kills someone, now they conflate that and say, oh, it's all conservatives.
All the conservatives are evil.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. We do have a caller on the line, I believe. I guess we don't. All right, we got a couple, but we just haven't got them ready yet. Let's, if we can, shift to, I guess we do. Patty is on the line. Is that right there? Patty from Minnetonka? Patty, good morning.
Hello. Hi, good morning. I love your show.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah. So has anyone talked about, I think, interpreting some of what President Trump was saying about, even though he denounced the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists, but said that both sides have responsibility because in our country they do have the right to peaceful protest, and the other side, you know, came and protested and was violent. So there is, it probably would have been peaceful had another group not come and been attacking. And I'm not supporting neo-Nazi, whatever, but we all have a right to peaceful protest. And when Black Lives Matter groups protested or were, you know, out there, no one came and caused violence against them. So I just thought I'd like to hear.
Yeah, Ken, take
Dr. Kaiser's.
I think there's a point there, and I think that President Trump was making that point yesterday too about how both sides, there was violence on both sides, and it's true that there probably wouldn't have been violence if there hadn't been two opposing groups. Of course, I mean and by the way, the white supremacists actually had a permit for their rally, and so you know he made that point too. And it's probably true that there wouldn't have been violence if there hadn't been two sides to, you know, be involved in the fight. But again, there wasn't really a moral equivalency between the two because the one is is a white supremacist group, neo-Nazi group. The other is opposed to them. So the group with the opposition has the moral high ground, at least on the issues. Certainly not in engaging in violence, but at least from the perspective of ideas, the people who are against the white supremacists would have had the moral high ground, and he didn't make that delineation. And so that's kind of where the problem was in terms of what the president said. It's absolutely correct that no matter who's engaging in the violence, they should be arrested or there are laws for that. But in terms of where the president was, he sort of gave away the moral authority of the presidency by not delineating that there was not an equivalency between the neo-Nazis and the people who opposed them.
Patty, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the show. We also have a caller, Jessica from Robbinsdale. Jessica, good morning.
My question is, I've seen a lot of vigils and other events like that pop up on Facebook, and I'm drawn to them because, as a Christian, I desire to show love and peace and unity. But then I look in more detail at the speakers, and I see pastors from some backgrounds that make me a little bit wary, and leaders of groups that maybe stand for some things that I can't support. And so I'm torn because I feel like I want to be a part of a visual statement of peace, love, and unity. But then I know that there will be things possibly shared and spoken that I don't agree with. So how do we interact in that?
I think you're right to be discerning about attending certain events. I know that I have been, and I think there are, I get it, where you want to be part of the movement, but you're right. You're very smart, I think, to look at who's going to be speaking and then decide not to be associated with ones who might be controversial. I've seen events take place where they were supposed to be peaceful, and then they became non-peaceful, too. And so, that's a thing absolutely to avoid. And so I think you're very smart to be discerning about what events you actually attend.
Thank you so much, Jessica, for the call.
Thank you.
Have a great day. God bless you. All right, Kent, I would say I'm ready to shift off this topic just a little bit. We've been at it this morning for a while. Let's talk a little bit about the prenatal screening tests across Europe.
Yeah, interesting. CBS News had a report about how Iceland, and they had this report about how Iceland had nearly... here's what they wrote. They wrote, Iceland is on pace to virtually eliminate Down syndrome through abortion. And then they had a whole report on this. Now, think about that, what they said. Iceland is on pace to virtually eliminate Down syndrome through abortion. I love the actress Patricia Heaton, pro-lifer. She's the one who played the mom on Everybody Loves Raymond, and she's on the mom on The Middle now on television. And she tweeted, Iceland isn't actually eliminating Down syndrome. They're just killing everybody that has it. Big difference. She's absolutely right. I mean, think about this. Like, any disease could be cured if only we kill the people who have it. We could cure cancer through euthanasia.
Sure.
We could, eliminate high health care costs by killing anybody who gets sick. It's just a warped way of thinking, just warped logic that abortion is the way to eliminate some disease. And of course, kids are going to continue to be born with Down syndrome. So it's not actually eliminating the disease or something. It's not like eradicating polio or smallpox or something. Mm-hmm. We will continue to have. So we would continue to have to kill children in order for this to be true, that Down syndrome was quote unquote eliminated. It's ridiculous. And then the other thing in here that bugs me is that this test is only 85% accurate. And here in this story, they were lamenting the fact that, oh, because it's only 85% accurate, we still have a child here and there who's born with Down syndrome. Well, I'm thinking in my head, if it's only 85% accurate, then that means that sometimes there's a false positive and they're killing a perfectly healthy kid because that kid might have Down syndrome. It's absurd thinking.
I'm with you on that. And this is a test that's done neonatal?
It is. And, they say there's no pressure on the women, like in Iceland, to do this. But one of the women who's featured in the television story said that, yeah, when the question was brought up to her, yeah, maybe she did feel a little bit of pressure because it was just offered. Just the fact that, oh, here, you could have this pre-screen. And then 100% of the women who find out that their child might have Down syndrome decide to have an abortion in Iceland. And you know what? The United States is not a whole lot better. Here it's 67%. So two-thirds of those women who have that screening done opt for an abortion when they find out that their child might have Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar statistics across the globe where these tests are done. So it's not as though we really have the moral high ground here in the United States either, but we do seem to be a little bit more pro-life. And there are many, because like Iceland is a country, by the way, where even the state church supports abortion. And so, you know, there are countries like the United States where I think there are still churches who are opposed to abortion, and we still have sort of that religious perspective that abortion is wrong for many people. And so that's probably why we're at only 67% who will have an abortion in the off chance that they might have a kid with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think that the whole thinking is just totally warped. I mean, what's next? If you can do a genetic screening for Down syndrome, obviously there are genetic screenings for other things. Now, I mean, actually, I have a friend who when she was going to have her first child, it was going to be a girl, and there was a screen that came back that it was like it came back positive. It said there's a 75% chance or something that this girl might have this one rare genetic disease that would, you know, make her life very difficult, and she might not live very long. That girl is about to go off to Britain to go to school. She's like a very smart kid going off to school, and she, you know, it just shows that, you know, thankfully my friends chose pro-life.
Yeah.
But yeah, just warped thinking to think that we could somehow, quote unquote, eliminate a disease through abortion.
Mm-hmm. Kent, thank you so much for coming in. Always great to see you on Wednesday. And thank you to Patty and Jessica, the callers who brought some wonderful questions into the studio for us to answer, or at least to work on. Have a great day, Kent.
Thanks for having me.
See you
on
next week. Yep, it is 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Good morning. A couple minutes until the top of the hour. We've got Jamar Tisby coming up next at about 8 minutes after the hour. And then my friend David Wheaton in the second half hour. We have a great hour coming up. Hour two is next. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.